Thanks. How does that sound? Sound okay? Maybe I'll move it up a little.
Sure.
Just a small bit, please. Yeah, thanks. The first poem I'm going to read is for a poem. It's a poem in honor of winter, but in honor of a day like we had today. Winter sun. When gray days split and rain slaps against the glass, I would remember the isla, where under brochure blue skies, our bodies packed in last year's suits, we dismiss the press of new flesh, ease sagging bellies, marbled thighs, onto canvas loungers, guiltlessly. Thirsty as stranded crabs, we gulp down the sun in long draughts, while the sea vacillates between turquoise and magenta, the waves trundle in, trundle out, and the tide's scalloped petticoat sweeps the shoreline like an old queen's ball gown. And the next poem is called Quickfire Tongues. I called him after a long time and heard the old, "Hello, babe," as though we had spoken yesterday. I shot him some ammo for his quickfire tongue and watched him grin down the telephone. "Hon, your marriages have short shelf lives," he said. "They should carry a warning label on the tin." Charlie, an old kettle, flame slicking its bottom, unable to ease the lid on its boiling temper. This aging Christian is looking for a miracle, willing to try anything, chant the Koran, spit nickels, scour pots, wash dishes, bed down beside rats, and scare away the mountain lion. Charlie, his marriage, stretching 55 years long as the thrill of his 60s white caddy. His wife, Bunny, rapping on in the seat beside him, releases the grip on her lower lip long enough to say, "Oh, come on, Charlie," her Brooklyn tongue coaxing. "Give them all a break today, Charlie, why don't ya?" The next poem is called The Supri Retreat Fire. Every summer I go to New Mexico to a retreat center. I've been going there for about 35 years. And it burnt down and we rebuilt it, but I wrote a poem about it. News leached from the telephone, a careless match flung by boozy geezers out on a turkey shoot, licked off the mountain clean. I mourn the gold carpet, musty from 35 years of seeped tears and imprinted feet that whirled in dervish dance. And what of the animals, those roamers and prowlers? On hot summer nights, my breath made cold by every rustle, by every burly shape that silhouettes my moonlit tent. I wasn't there to see black bears fumble for their young. Disbelief in the snake's terrified eyes. Nor hear the cougars howl, curling the fetid air. Nor the resinous pines sizzle like fat and turn to charred specters. I returned for the rebuild to a soft brown skeleton rising from the ashes and wondered what chink of heaven could change this place that looked as though an avenging angel had flung a can of tar across the mountain. Then, through the burnt up soil, a strip of sage appeared. Beside it, morning glories nodding their luminous heads. Which brings me to the next poem. It's entitled Rumi. Rumi, as probably everybody knows by now, because he's been fashionable in the West for the past 15 years. He was a Persian Muslim poet, and he was born in the 1207, actually. He was born, that's the 13th century, and he spent most of his life in Konya, which was called Old Iconium in Old Byzantium. He's famous, the Sufis are famous for whirling, but it's also called the turn. And in this poem, I use the word turn. Rumi, he turns in the marketplace in Konya, where goldsmiths hammer gold to cups and plates for a sultan's pleasure. Steady as a minaret, his feet on the anvil of time. He whirls counterclockwise, the way of atoms, planets. His outstretched arms a chain between the mundane and mystical, his fingertips touching the threshold. He turns to empty, a reed pipe ready for the divine play of breath. And because I like Rumi so much, and I was in Turkey a few years ago, I decided to go and look and find his tomb. And his tomb is actually 800 kilometers from the Iraqi border, so it was quite a hike to get there. And I ended up not writing about Rumi, which I thought I would, but I wrote about the trip to get there. It's called The Road to Konya. Late afternoon Bodrum. The bus revved and ready for Anatolia's central plain. Nudges through hordes of buses bound for all parts Turkey. Nudges past tourists who forage for genuine fakes. Tommy, Gucci, Gucci, and turns by sugar-cubed houses, snips of beach between, where canopies fold like pink magnolias to flower in tomorrow's bikini sun. 12 hours to Konya. The guidebook describes a conservative, unfriendly place. Segregated by sex and a narrow aisle, where the attendant's smile offers tea, coffee, cola, all free, and then pandini, slices of gold mosaic cake. I well remember Yeats as we ride through Byzantium. In Sparta, we pick up farm laborers, faces lined deep as potato grooves, slouching towards our red cushioned seats, and the attendant's splash of lemon-scented water, lightening their heavy sweat. By nightfall, my neighbor's rosary is done. She points to the white moon and chants Nure. She curves her finger towards herself, and I guess white moon's her name. I offer my own. We slip to easy-mimed conversations, swap hard-boiled sweets and handy wipes. She fumbles for aspirin, and I mimic a sympathetic headache. and the bus presses on. Sarki Karashak. This sign's a strain to read. Men wait for nothing to happen besides thrown up grease blocks for us as cinders. Our headlights, their monotonous respite. At 5 a.m. we stop by a silent park and I am dropped on the highway at the edge of a black day. I have come to the holy city of Iconium. A single traveler who takes the only path which ends at a neon glare. Hoskalgenes, welcome. I live very close to the Shannon River, just a block away actually, and I walk my dog along there and over the bridges, etc. I often notice that men stand looking into the water on their own, and they spend a long time looking at that river. Men are usually on their own, and I often wonder what they think about. So this poem is called A Man at the Edge. A man at the edge, when winter's raw bite tears his eyes, recalls the oily sheen of water. When ships sailed in from distant lands, salty tang ripe on sailors' lips, and loose upon the quay, lumps of coal lost from broken sacks, a foreign black gift scooped up by ragged children. When winter's raw bite tears his eyes, a man at the edge recalls his father's Spanish galleon, stern, bow, small white sails anchored, corked in a long green bottle, witness to countless family storms, sailing high on the kitchen shelf, forever out of reach of his clumsy schoolboy hands. A man at the edge, heart marooned by one too many gales, contemplates water. And I'm sure it's happening here as well. The title of this poem, Night Swans, there's so many suicides, as we all know, around the rivers of Ireland. And again, it's on the Shannon River, bouquets left on bridges. And this poem is called Night Swans. Oh, and it mentions Shunna, who's the goddess of the River Shannon. Night Swans. I hear their cries rising from the Shannon River, where idle and blessed swans in white garments morph to white feathers when night comes on. Thin as a new moon, discarnate souls cry out to Shunna to rewind time and release them from her liquid grip, because the past improves by distance. And on the banks of hope and worry, tarred bouquets release their petals to float like the swans when night comes on, to drown and join the ones who lie below. The next poem is called Lola Montez. I don't know if anybody ever here heard of her. She was supposed to be born in Limerick, and she's connected with Limerick, but I read a biography of hers, about her. She was born in 18-something, and she was actually born in Cork. I think her father might have been a lieutenant in the British Army or something like that. Anyway, to make a long story very short, any time you hear the word Lola, any song or any story. It is actually about Lola Montez. She ended up becoming a courtesan in Europe, at times a prostitute. She had a very checkered career, and she actually found her way into the court of King Ludwig of Bavaria. And her portrait is there today, and in his gallery of beauties. But when you go to the bookshop, there is a little postcard, again, it has her portrait on it, and it says Lola Montez, gives the date of birth and says Limerick, but she's actually Cork. But here is the poem. Lola Montez, I found you at the Nymphenburg Palace in King Ludwig's Gallery of Beauties, startled by your portrait, gazing forever from out a gilded frame. I admired your gown, its rustle of silk black brush strokes, lace collar bright white about your neck, cool blue eyes locked in ambition, a firm gaze and a fine bold face, and a spray of pink carnations fastened to your hair. Your place apparently secure among the courtesans of Europe, Lola. Before the palace gate, white swans sail the royal lake. They boast of your beauty, your conquests, your unsteady climb to fame. Then rise and wing again towards Limerick. Swoop and settle on the Shannon River and sing to their sisters of your infamous name. There among the beggars, the thieves, barefoot round-heeled women, squelch poverty between their toes, streel ragged petticoats through cobbled streets, their breasts displayed like ripened fruit. Stale perfume reeks from bodies never fully washed, and under the flame of cold gas lamps, there is secret beckoning to seamen in from Europe. Your fame, Lola, learned through bartered flesh, through clink of coins and thrusts in bitter doorways. And in the ashen hours of evening, these doxies stopped to swill hot whiskey, gulp down gin, then marvel at your conquests and dream of offering up their skills in firelit rooms on canopied beds. Franz Liszt visited Ireland before he met Lola Montez. She was also a brief lover of Franz Liszt. He visited Ireland, he played in Dublin and Cork, and stopped on into Limerick on his way to Cork. So this is called Liszt Plays Limerick. Of course, he's telling Lola about this. On my grand tour of Ireland, Lola, driving through dim chilled air, swaddled in my great Hungarian coat of green, blue, and multicolored leathers, I greeted your city before I greeted you. Ah, Lola, Limerick, it's one long street, a backbone with even ribs. My stay at Cruz's Royal Mail Hotel, my bad dinners, the bumpkins, and screams from petrified pigs whipped to market. The ladies who came to hear me play, unmoved by my rhapsodies, Michael Sandel's, displayed no emotion, but sat subdued as nuns. I spent a lot of time in Madrid. And I wrote this poem in a park there when I was just fed up on Madrid, and something told me never go back. But I didn't heed it. The first I did, I went back again and I smashed my knee. The second time I stood on the prong of the iron at home and I limped off to Madrid. I was supposed to be there for 2 weeks. I called Ryanair the next day and had to take an expensive flight home. It was the second time. The third time I was going to something there last Easter. Had my ticket and the something I was going to was cancelled. So I really feel I should have listened to that poem. Adios, Madrid. Today I refuse to stoop for a seed pod beneath your retiro trees, or wish under its gnarled junipers, or admire its plump herbaceous borders. Once I could not pass Botero's woman lying amid traffic on Plaza de Colón without a pat to her resplendent rump bronzing in the midday sun. And I have grown weary of wedding cake structures, iron horses poised on rooftops, spurred by reckless horsemen riding to nowhere, and Romanesque doors leading to musty interiors. Weary of spring processions, staggering centipedes under floats, flowers, and vacuous Marys, the jostled cries of Viva, Viva, guarded by hooded bodies hidden in purple robes, chilly reminders of your tradition of Inquisition. It's called Waiting for Miss America. I was in the States the summer before last, and I was watching TV waiting for Miss America to come on. This is the poem. Waiting for Miss America. In Lorenzo's house, we gather round the telly, chomp on nachos, guacamole, sip icy margaritas, and wait for Miss America. Relentlessly female creatures line up in pink bikinis, their legs long as 51 flamingos, and each one weaned on Barbie. The ads are over. The misses show their talents. Minneapolis on a grand piano, her sinewy arms striking Liberace-like chords. Alabama next in a deep red dress, skin dark as a ripened plum. Political correctness now dictates that she should win, and besides how well she could sing. Ads again, then the missies are back. Brown and black haired manes, blonded clones in $1 million gowns. Backless, frontless, demontate in silk, their dizzy and ditzy grins practiced as kids. Imagine their steady climb, cuties stealing trophies from baby pageants, grabbing firsts at Miss Teens and small town competitions, then the big stage win. Millions took to Twitter, placed wagers on Miss Arkansas, but tonight the crown sits lightly on New York's head, her smile wide as the Hudson River. Hand on heart, she blubbers, "Oh my God, I won!" And in Lorenzo's house, we clapped, we cheered, we tossed our nachos in the air, cause she was the elder sister, and by next year, out to pasture alone in some unremembered field. Thank you.